Welcome in to another edition of Golden Black Radio, a Friday edition of GBR. I'm your host, Derek Schultz. Green Day has a popular song that you've probably heard if you have listened to the radio at any point over the past 20 years. It's called Wake Me Up When September Ends. And I think I speak for the entire Golden Black crew when I say we feel like that's fitting on today's show as Purdue looks to turn the page after a 1-3 and very rough September. The problem is that they're not only going to have to go back on the road for a second time this season, looking to end a losing streak to Wisconsin, who have dominated the series throughout most of the lifetimes of any player participating in the game, but they're also going to go ahead and have to do so with the season basically hanging in the balance. Today's show will break down the matchup in Madison and provide some analysis and historical perspective. But before we get started, Golden Black Radio is brought to you by Purdue Federal Credit Union, a proud partner of Purdue Athletics and the official credit card for Purdue fans. Boiler up. East End Grill and Rippling Company, two distinctive bistros across the street from one another on the far end of Main Street, the perfect place for your next event. And the Whitaker Inn, for unparalleled comfort and cuisine, visit the Whitaker Inn. Let's welcome on analyst Tom Dienhart. And I want to promise our listeners, Tom, that we are absolutely not going to go through all 17 defeats at the hands of Bucky. But even though, look, it's a brand new year, right? What does the 2024 teams have to do with the 2007 or the 2014 wins? I get it. But I think it's still really hard for Purdue fans to fully remove that aspect from the storyline.
Yeah, I mean, 17 game streak, Derek. We talked about that earlier this week. Dating back to 2003, 20 years have passed, 17 games in 20 years, and it's confounding. And you're right, history doesn't really matter, but it's fun to talk about and discuss. And this is some sordid history for Purdue football. Been trying to get this monkey off their back for years. Came close in 2018, triple overtime over in Ross-Reed Stadium. Didn't get it done, but
the Jonathan Taylor game.
Jonathan Taylor game, yeah. People watching this know Jonathan Taylor is obviously with the Colts. But, yeah, you know, here we are, Derek, and we know Purdue's desperate, right? You alluded to there, September 1-3. Well, Wisconsin is probably equally as desperate. They're 2-2, but they've lost two in a row. They're playing without their starting quarterback the rest of the year. Things have kind of gone not totally sideways on that program, but things haven't gone that well under Luke Fickell. And this season certainly is still filled with a lot of questions. And they're a program looking to get back on track, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that they're approaching this game the same way that Purdue is. I mean, at 2-2 after just getting basically run off the field in the second half against USC. Yeah. I think they're feeling like, look, a 1-3 Purdue team at home, we've got to take care of business in that game. But if we're going to talk about positives for Purdue, maybe that defensive performance in the first half against Nebraska, I know we talked a little bit about on Tuesday's show because it did feel like that unit gave the Boilers a chance. Was there anything in that Nebraska game that you think Purdue could carry over from a positive standpoint?
Yeah, I think you talked about the defense. That's probably – even the last 2 weeks, you were out in Corvallis, and defense sort of bowed its back and did what it could to keep the team in the game for most of the first half, kept getting thrown back on the field time and again. And that happened, sadly, against Nebraska, too, Derek. And the defense certainly has its warts. It's got things it has to improve. Giving up the big plays are one and getting better on third downs another. But I think that side of the ball has been better than the offensive side of the ball. And we saw that defense have a couple tweaks last week, Derek. They played a little bit more zone coverage in the back end. And that was partly because of who they were playing, but they did want to try to mix things up. I got a quick word with Ryan Walters before his coach's show today talking about that a little bit. And we saw Kydren Jenkins play a little bit more rush in. Mm-hmm. That was, too, because of some injuries up front. And let's be honest, that's probably his better position. And then, of course, the big one, Derek, we saw Dylan Thienemann playing closer to the line of scrimmage with Antonio Stevens out. I think we're going to see that happen again Saturday. They like Dylan up front. He gets involved in the action quickly, and he's a playmaker. So they're trying on defense with some new wrinkles, and again, that's one side of the ball that has shown a little bit more life than offense.
Let's talk about the big news from the offense this week. The Graham Harrell decision came before Tuesday's show, so we discussed that. But then Jason Simmons, who has mostly cut his teeth at Indianapolis area high schools, is now going to be in the OC role. But he had success last season, his 1 year at Miami of Ohio, as he oversaw a running back room that produced over 2,200 yards. Obviously here, a bit of a baptism by fire, but do you think that he's ready to take it on? And what have they been saying about him this week leading up to this game against Wisconsin?
Well, see, he's confident. He's 48 years old, 23 years of coaching experience in the high school ranks. Head coach at Ben Davis, head coach at Noblesville, head coach at Hamilton Heights. talked about the 1 year, 2023, coaching running backs at Miami of Ohio. Just a salt of the earth guy. He just got hired in March, but he's pretty much endeared himself to most everybody in the Kosich football complex. A good person, knows how to relate to the kids, and just has a real ease about him. He seems like he's unflappable. This moment doesn't seem to be overwhelming him. Granted, we only got 10 minutes in front of him on Wednesday, but I got to know him a little bit in August. I'd see him on practices. We'd chit-chat, and he was always very friendly then. Who could have thought, Derek, a couple months later, he's running the offense? I think he kind of knows what he's doing. Now, we can't expect a miracle, right? You can't rebuild this thing on the fly. Purdue has its flaws, but sometimes a fresh set of eyes, maybe he's got some ideas to maybe make Hudson Carr more effective, roll the pocket out, get rid of the ball quicker with some slants. Maybe he's got some ideas like that could maybe play to more to the strengths of this offense and try to get things sorted out. Because, Derek, really, in my mind, it's two areas that have really hurt this offense. One is third downs. They can't stay on the field. Yeah. They can't sustain drives, and that affects your defense. Two, passing game, specifically explosive passing plays, have been absent. They can run the ball. Passing game, big plays have been pretty much non-existent. We'll see if Jason can provide any spark there.
Yeah, and speaking of Indy area high schools, I remember watching Jerron Tibbs play at Cathedral, I think it was, and he's just a sophomore. And look, Tom, 5 receptions for 46 yards doesn't seem like much, but with where this passing game has been, that's a pretty good performance. Is that something to build up? Can somebody else, whether it be Jerron Tibbs or someone else, just emerge from that receiver room and take some of the pressure off of it? Really, it's been the Max Clair or literally nothing else.
Yeah, I think Tibbs, and I think Leland Smith, the junior college transfer, we've seen him make some nice catches. I think those are two guys that they're counting on or hoping to count on to step up. Derek, I'm going to say this too, my friend. I think there's a good chance on Saturday we're going to see Jamal Edron, big kid from Florida Atlantic who played in the opener, actually got hurt in the opener, then fought through the Notre Dame game, then missed Oregon State, missed Nebraska. We were originally told it was going to be maybe, 3 to 4 weeks, and it was his knee that he hurt. But I got a feeling maybe we're going to see him. That would be a nice boost. Again, that was a guy that was supposed to be the presumed number one receiver. We saw some flashes in the opener. This certainly would be a great time to get him back on the field, Derek, because you and I both know, and the people watching this, that wide receiving core needs some playmakers.
Yeah, absolutely. On the Wisconsin side of things, we know Miami transfer Tyler Van Dyke will not be there. He tore his ACL a couple of weeks ago, but their backup does have experience. That said, Tom, and you broke this to me because I didn't see this, apparently within the last hour, Wisconsin's also going to be down their leading rusher.
Yeah, I was just kind of scrolling through my phone on Twitter before I hopped on with you. Shane Malusi, who was a Clemson transfer, he was a guy Purdue actually recruited when Jeff Rahm was here to try to get him out of the portal. He went to Wisconsin, their leading rusher. He's out indefinitely. He wants to, I guess he's not totally healthy, not able to play up to the standard that he wants. So he's going to be subtracted from the Badger lineup, sadly, when Purdue goes up there. So, hey, more power to Purdue, right? It's a Wisconsin offense, and people will hear this when they listen to my interview with Jake Kokorowski, that really, like Purdue, is looking for an identity. They really don't have one right now. Running the ball or passing the ball, there's nothing they can really hang their hat on. Now they're going to lose their number one running back. So not good for that Badger team, and good for the Purdue defense maybe. So, hey, man, like I said, Purdue fans aren't going to cry for anybody's woes right now.
Tom, you got the chance to talk to Jake Kokorowski, probably the most fun name that we're going to have to say from the opponent's view this week. But before we get to the interview, I wanted to tell you guys about our friends at Sand Valley Resort, proud sponsors of Golden Black Radio. Celebrate all that the wilderness provides this fall and winter at Sand Valley. Experience everything from Thanksgiving dinner, curling and ice hockey, to ice fishing and snowshoeing, and even the restorative benefits of a guided cold plunge in the frozen lakes. Start planning your next winter getaway by visiting sandvalleypursuits.com. Tom, we'll bring you back on to talk a little Big Ten as well. We're going to get to your opponent view next. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's our pal Tom Dienhart, and here's our conversation. It's Tom's conversation. His opponent view with Jake Kokorowski from the Wisconsin Beacon Journal. He has covered the Badgers for over a decade and gave a great preview as far as this game, which will be a noon kick coming up here on Saturday as Wisconsin looks to get back on track and Purdue looks to end a 17-game losing skid in the series. Here's that conversation.
All right. We've got a special guest, Jake Kokorowski, the Wisconsin State Journal. Jake's a good guy I've gotten to know over the years, enjoy his knowledge, his insight, his friendship. Maybe the strongest sports writer in the Big Ten. You benching 400 pounds yet, Jake?
I'm getting there, man. Like, I got the squat above five, not recently, but I got the squat above 500. Maybe if I on a good day, 350. It's a bit of a challenge during the football season.
Sure.
And trying to keep consistent. And then on top of that, I'm coaching my boys flag football league. So it's my time is next to none now up until December and January.
Yeah, so kind of drop a little Wisconsin knowledge on us, Jake. A good place we always like to start. Kind of tell the viewers here what they can expect from the Badger offense on Saturday when this thing kicks off 11 a.m. Central Time up there.
Yeah, looking at the offense, it's interesting. Everyone talks about Wisconsin's identity for the past, 24 years, ever since Barry Alvarez took over as a power running type of offense. And obviously Luke Fickell brought in Phil Longo, who is a disciple of the air raid. Passing scheme wise, he's always tried to say ever since he's come to Wisconsin that he's been able to run too and cater to the best players on the team. And so for Wisconsin this year, it's been interesting because obviously Wisconsin, there's no Tyler Van Dyke. He's out for the season after that, just a really terrible injury against Alabama in the third game of the year. Braden Locke, the redshirt sophomore, Mississippi State transfer, and he's in his second year in Madison, is taken over. It's kind of interesting just to see with this Wisconsin offense where the offensive line has improved from last year. I don't think Fickell has gotten as much credit as he deserves for hiring AJ Blazek from Vanderbilt, both on the recruiting trail and on the field. You've seen improvements and whatnot, and especially on the field and what they've done in terms of, I think they've only allowed 5 sacks this season. Their run game is more consistent. They haven't broken a big one yet, but I think the offensive line can move more. I know Purdue's had trouble defending the run, especially against Notre Dame and Oregon State. So they have a slew of backs that are, and Luke Fickell talked about this earlier this week, is that he feels that maybe they need to home in on three running backs potentially, but they have about 5 or 6 that could play right now. And so, but that also, like, part of the identity problem with Wisconsin, I think, on offense is you have a run game. That could be improved, and it has been. They ran the ball decently against USC. They've run it throughout the year pretty well, but it's an air raid scheme, so there should be some balance passing the ball. And now with a new quarterback, what's the thing? Do you try to slow down the game with a running game and just like we used to, kind of stereotypical Wisconsin, or do you try to speed things up and go full tempo air raid, purest type of air raid that Longo can run? And so they have receivers like Will Pauling in the slot, Tretch Kekahuna, who are problem matchups. They have some decent outside wide receivers, but it's kind of what's going to happen in this game? Can they get a first down and then start speeding up the tempo like you see with other air raid offenses and then start throwing them off? Or do they grind the ball a little bit more? And so it'll be interesting to see, just especially against Purdue's defense that really, against the run has not been.
Yeah. What do you think we can expect from that Badger defense on Saturday, Jake?
Right. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, the game's going to be won. I feel this is so cliche, Tom. You're going up against, whoever wins at the line of scrimmage with the offensive and defensive lines. Wisconsin, they gave up 161 yards to USC. USC didn't gash them for anything really in that game. The run defense isn't what it was underneath Jim Leonard, where everyone could guarantee that, they put the emphasis on stopping the run first. And I'm not saying Mike Tressel doesn't, but they just haven't had in the past two seasons as dominant of a run defense. But, and I know Devin Mockabee and Reggie Love III have been bright spots in an otherwise rough Purdue offense, but they do. It's a talented secondary. You have Hunter Wohler, Ricardo Hallman, who were all Big Ten honorees last year. Ricardo Hallman was, I believe, a third-team All-American by the AP. You have, I mean, I still think that the linebackers are a lot more talent. It's a lot deeper and more talented linebacker room, both inside and outside. I would just say, I think the performance that is going to be watching is the inside linebackers. And if they can continue to evolve and, you know, they brought in a bunch of transfers like Jaheim Thomas from Arkansas, who previously was at Cincinnati underneath Fickell and Tressel. You have as well, Tackett Curtis, the Southern Cal linebacker, who I think will be getting more reps down the road because he's starting to finally get used to being within this defense. But it's going to come down to the line of scrimmage. And can Wisconsin, one, get pressure? They got pressure more against USC, which led to some turnovers in that 21-10 lead at halftime before the wheels fall off in the second half. Can Wisconsin hold up against the run? Can the front seven hold up, or the front five, or whatever you want to call it, front six with how Wisconsin usually runs more of a nickel package now. Mm-hmm. Can they hold up against the run? Will we see Wisconsin go to more three down linemen against what Purdue and their, whoever's calling plays for Purdue, tries to throw. And so that's what stands out. I think if they can create pressure, which you started seeing last week, if they can create the pressure, that'll lead to more havoc plays and more, turnover possibilities. And that's what they need right now. They need to play complimentary. They played kind of complimentary ball, offense, defense, special teams in that first half. That was a glimpse of what was kind of is being sold at Wisconsin right now, is that they can play complimentary football in all three phases. We got that in terms of us reporters watching it in the first half. Did not happen against USC in the second half.
How do you see this game playing out, Jake? I mean, it's a 17-game winning streak for Wisconsin. This thing dates back to Purdue's last win in 2003 up there in Madison. You talked about Purdue a little bit. There is a little bit of disarray here. Made a change at offensive coordinator. Graham Harrell out. Jason Simmons, who was an analyst, has only been an FBS assistant for 1 year, has a lot of high school experience in Indianapolis. He's going to be the guy pushing buttons on this offense. I believe the Badgers are a double-digit favorite. Playing out Saturday, Jake.
Yeah, I think with Wisconsin, Wisconsin will win. But I mean, you can't let Purdue stay in the game through the second half. I think it's going to be up for Wisconsin for them, if they get the ball on offense, they're going to establish the run. But then I also think we saw a little bit of it against Southern Cal in that first half where they're able to run the ball. Mm-hmm. They get a first down, but then they go up tempo, and that's how you can get the defense thrown off with missed assignments. You can't substitute out. You stay in the same personnel groupings. I think Wisconsin should continue to do that. I think the running backs will have a good day, whether it's Ches Malusi, Tawi Walker, or Cade Yakimel, or even one of the true freshmen like Darion Dupree, who's a four-star recruit out of Illinois in last year's class. So I think with Wisconsin, I do expect probably a 14-17 point win. Things still aren't, though, running on all cylinders. And Wisconsin's, it's a must-win game for Wisconsin if they want to have bowl eligibility and have that consecutive streak continue for bowl games, because Rutgers is playing really well. They go to Rutgers next week. They have, it's on top of that. I mean, Northwestern, but they have home contests against Penn State and Oregon. They have to go on the road to Iowa and Nebraska. And so there's going to need Wisconsin's, it's going to be very interesting to see just how they do. And this is the game to do it, to reestablish and get back feeling good. But I do think they'll work to have a good ground game and attack Purdue's weakness there. And offensively, they're going to have to shut down the run. I think they do it to a good extent. And, but I do think they're going to have to obviously play clean, because you can't let a Purdue team that's reeling have any hope or momentum heading into that, later in the second half.
Yeah, two teams I know desperate to get back on track to get a W. Jake, I look forward to seeing you Saturday in my favorite Big Ten city of them all, beautiful Madison, Wisconsin, a great venue, Camp Randall Stadium. Thanks again, sir, and like I said, I'll see you on Saturday.
Sounds great, man. We'll have to get it brought up in the press box.
Thanks again to Jake Kokoroski for that fantastic preview. And when we bring Alan Karpik back on, I want to touch on something that Jake said. And Alan's kind of the main, Golden Black publisher, right? But I think we need to present Tom Dienhart, our buddy, with a gift for every time a certain phrase is mentioned, either on this show or in the opponent view. But I'll tell you about that here in just a second. First, let's get the forecast coming up here for the game on Saturday. It's a noon kick in Madison, and our pals at WLFI and meteorologist David Sipple has the outlook for Saturday's game in Madison against the Boilers.
Hello from News 18. I'm Storm Team 18 meteorologist David Sipple. The Boilermakers are heading to Madison, Wisconsin to play the Badgers on Saturday with a kickoff time around noon. If you plan on heading up to Madison early to tailgate, be sure to grab the jacket at least for the morning hours. Morning temperatures will be in the mid-40s with southeast winds about 10 miles per hour. Expect mostly sunny skies for the day. At kickoff, temperatures will be around 70 degrees with gusty south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour and gusts up to 25 to 30 miles per hour from the south. Throughout the game, it will be mostly sunny and windy. High temperatures by the end of the game will be in the mid-70s. A low chance of a passing shower will be possible later in the day but will not impact the game. Overall, expect a windy and mostly sunny game with decent temperatures up in Badger territory. From News 18, I'm Storm Team 18 meteorologist David Sipple. Boiler up, hammer down.
We appreciate David Sipple and the entire team over at WLFI and wanted to tell you about our great team here at goldenblack.com. Analysis reports, shows like this one, Knucklehead Central, Tom Dienhart's, of course, his analysis, Brian Newbert's columns, Allen's historical lookbacks. You can get it all at goldenblack.com. Subscribe today. Brian Newbert, speaking of, is returning from Big Ten Hoops Media Day. Maybe we're just going to start making up reasons why he's not here, but I'm going to start. I promise he's going to rejoin us here pretty soon. But Alan, you know, I kind of teased this before, and we could bring this up when we bring Tom back in, but I heard Jay Kokorowski say complimentary football at least four or five times. And I think we need one of those like old school hotel desk bells, ding, where every time we hear compliment, because I know obviously that's something that has been a theme for Ryan Walters and his group too.
I don't know if we dare have a drinking game. We don't have a sponsor that, we need to get either some good IPA or maybe some good whiskey on this, because that would be perfect. I don't know. I didn't hear much about complimentary football until relatively recent past. Now everybody uses it. Purdue hopes it has some level of it come 11 o'clock in the morning local time when Purdue takes on the Badgers.
We often lean on you for our historical lookbacks and going way back, which basically no living human can do the way that Alan Karpik can do. But
that's because I'm old, my friend.
I think I speak for Purdue football fans, Alan, when I say, yeah, everybody's real aware of the 21st century history against this Wisconsin team.
Yeah, I mean, when you've lost 17 in a row, it's what I just saw in the Wisconsin game notes. Funny, it doesn't show up in the Purdue game notes. It's the second longest active streak in the Big Ten. Of course, Ohio State, Indiana, I think it's at 28 games. It is, I think, the eighth longest in the history of the Big Ten, 17 games. Purdue actually had a 20-game win streak over Iowa, if you can believe that, from 1961 to 1980. That's the only other place that Purdue shows up. But this is one that Purdue would like to get rid of. Not sure it's going to happen Saturday, but it has been a long one. And the problem is games haven't been close in Madison. I think Wisconsin's drilled Purdue by big numbers, averaged, I think, over 36 points a game during that streak dating from 2005 through 2022 in Madison. So Purdue needs to get close first before they maybe get a win. There haven't been very many close games in Madison.
Now, I'm getting old, but I do remember my college years came right after Y2K. So I do remember the overtime win, which kind of kept the Big Ten championship hopes alive in 2000. That, if I'm not mistaken, that was the game right before the Breeze to Morales-Ohio State game, correct?
Two games before it was. Two games. No, you're right. No, you're right. It was. It was the week before, because Purdue had won at Northwestern, who ended up tying for the Big Ten championship with Purdue. They go to Wisconsin the following week, and of course, Ohio State on the 28th of October, but 2000. But who remembers that? But yes, it was a crazy game. And of course, that Wisconsin win, it took a Craig Terrell, former Golden Black intern. We always remind him, the Lebanon Navy, of that. Great, great guy Craig was, but he was a great player on that day. He had the big block on the, you know, remember, Aiken Adell had a big sack of the Wisconsin quarterback, forced the Badgers to try a long field goal. It kicked right into about into Craig Terrell's shoulder pads. The ball bounced the right way, and Ashante Woodyer grabbed it and scooped and scored, ran to the end zone. Purdue had a pile, a dog pile, so to speak, in the corner end zone to celebrate that win over Wisconsin in 2000.
You know, in 2003, they won at Camp Randall again, a very weird season, right? They opened the year with a loss to Bowling Green, and then they rattled off six straight wins. Wisconsin was, I think, the sixth of that. I've always sort of felt pound for pound. I get that the 2000 team went to the Rose Bowl via a tiebreaker, and they also had Drew Brees. I always kind of felt pound for pound, just from a pure talent standpoint, that the 2003 team might have been Tiller's best team. Agree, disagree. I you're the expert, so you tell me. But that team was I really thought was loaded with defensive talent, especially.
Well, yeah, it's certainly as good a defense as Purdue's had. We talked about Purdue's formula, and it has not been defense historically, and it's just been the way that it's not. Brock Spack, the coordinator at that time, did a great job. Purdue was really good defensively in 2002. They lost several nail biter games, including the trestle ball win that led Ohio State to that 10-6 win and got the Buckeyes a chance to win the national championship, which it did. But 2003, I would agree that if you take away the, and again, you can't do this, but if you could, and you take away the Bowling Green loss, you take away, you beat Georgia, if you'd have beaten Georgia I guess it was the Citrus Bowl, the champs. Yeah. I don't know. It wasn't the champs, but it was down in Orlando. Capital One at that time, whoever the sponsor was, you know, Purdue was way down in that game, had a chance to win it, lost it in overtime. But, you know, Purdue only has one 10-win season in its entire history back in 1979 with Mark Herman and company. That would have been a 10-win season had Purdue pulled out that game. But, yeah, I think as good as Kyle Orton was, and Purdue played complimentary football with a capital C in 2003, even before it was popular, because Kyle Orton didn't throw it all that much, with one big exception, that Wisconsin game in 2003, Purdue's last win over the Badgers, 55 attempts in that game. Jim Chaney decided they were going to throw the ball to try to beat Wisconsin. Game day was there, if you can believe that. Purdue wins that game on a last, with 4 seconds to go. Ben Jones hits a chip shot field goal after a critical pass from Kyle Orton to Ray Graham in the corner that gave Purdue a chance to get to that win. And again, there hasn't been one since.
Yeah, Tom and I talked about this on Tuesday's show, and like I said, we're not going to rehash all 17.
No.
But the one that kickstarted that is certainly on the pantheon of men's basketball or football. The losses that caused the most heartbreak. College game day was at Ross-Ade Stadium. Purdue was in a position where I think all they needed to do was get a couple of first downs. You know, Kyle Orton arguably was the Heisman front runner. I remember them hyping him up for that. Yep. And it just kind of one of those moments, Alan, that, you know, I understand that, you know, Joe Tiller came back and had okay success. Remember, they kind of hit that, you know, 04, 05, 06, and, you know, 07, 08. I don't think those were any seasons to throw a parade over. But then Jeff Brohm comes in and has some success as well. But I really feel like it's kind of one of those program moments that they've never really 100% recovered from.
And I don't think you can debate that. I mean, it's really, really true. I mean, if you look at this over the lens of decades, it's true. Because Joe Tiller in 2005, that was his first non-bowl season, even though they were preseason number one by the Orlando Sentinel in 2005. Yeah. Who could forget that? But yes, that thud I heard, I was in the elevator going down to the press conference. And I heard like I was doing the post game show with Rob Blackman. We had to leave like with 3 minutes to go to get to the restaurant time because we were doing it at a restaurant that time. And the audible gasp in the elevator going down the elevator. They had just built that the pavilion there at Ross-Ade. And I said, what? And Rob and I looked at each other and said, what the heck happened? And then, of course, we look up and there it goes. But you got to remember, too, Purdue still had a chance to win that game. Ben Jones misses a 42-yard field goal with seconds to go to at least tie it and send it to overtime. But it was still a crushing, crushing defeat. And no Purdue fan. I guess men's basketball certainly got Purdue fans over the Fairleigh Dickinson loss last year in spades. But this is one that really has never been the same. Yes, Rondale Moore was as magical as it can get in 2018. There were some other magical moments in the Brohm era, but you're right, from Tiller on, from 2005 to 2008, they started 5-0 in 2007. The last time Purdue had been ranked, has been ranked, but it has, it's pretty been pretty nondescript since then, and that's been a disappointing thing.
Yeah, I mean, there have been moments, certainly, you know, winning at number two Iowa with David Bell and, you know, the Tyler Trent.
Yeah, winning Moore, yeah, being at Michigan State, certainly, too.
But unfortunately, they've never – it felt like kind of the end of the peak of the prime of the Joe Tiller era there as you know, they never really kind of recovered in the final four seasons. Let's bring back our friend Tom Dienhardt here in just a little bit. We're going to talk about some of the Big Ten games. But first, thanks to our friends at the Whitaker Inn, the Midwestern Oasis, perfect for a relaxing staycation or a weekend getaway. Escape from the ordinary at the Whitaker Inn. Tom Dienhardt rejoins us. Guys, looking at the Big Ten slate, kind of a meh week. I guess Washington having Michigan come to Seattle is a good one. I don't think Washington is very good. I'm still not really sure that Michigan is very good. Yeah. And I'm also I'm curious to see what Rutgers does in Lincoln because they were kind of like this sexy dark horse pick, and I think this is a chance for them. I don't think Washington does it at home. I think this is a chance for them to turn some heads.
Yeah, I tell you, you hit the game I'm interested in, Derek. The Rutgers at Nebraska game. Rutgers, like you said, was a darling back at Big Ten Media Day in late July. They had a pretty comfortable schedule, pretty user-friendly schedule. Typical Shiano team, tough, going to run, punch you in the nose, won't beat themselves. And they wade into Lincoln, Nebraska, 4-1. So I think that's a game that's got a lot of appeal for me, yet another test for Rutgers. Talked about Michigan, Washington, that's more about the name brands, right? Neither team looks like they're of that ilk. Last year, of course, this is what a rematch, the national championship game, actually. So two cool schools with great traditions. So just those names alone kind of make you sit up in your seat a little bit higher. And then Iowa at Ohio State, right? You know, the Buckeyes, maybe the favorite to win the national championship this year. Iowa's Iowa. You know what you're going to get. And, boy, if they can get in the head of Ohio State, get a lead, that Phil Parker defense, maybe work some magic. Who knows? Maybe that could be an interesting game as well.
Yeah, you got Ohio State looking ahead. I don't know if they will, but they've got Oregon next week, right? And that is going to be an interesting one. I still have yet to figure out, again, I say this every time, I'm not a gambler. How did the line go at Wisconsin or Michigan, Washington started out with Michigan like a 3 or 4 point favorite. Now Washington's a 3 point favorite. There wasn't any injury that I'm aware of. And maybe I just am all wet here, but that game is interesting just because you don't know where Michigan is. They got it. They were very fortunate. Yes. Last week, getting a call maybe at the right time, or they would have squandered a big enough advantage. They still don't throw the football very well. Washington, we know, isn't all that good. They're both so dramatically different from where they were last year in the national championship game. I think that's going to be another one. Indiana Northwestern. I know Purdue fans would like to see Indiana maybe stumble. I don't see them doing that. Do you guys see any chance that happens up there?
I don't. Not with Indiana's offensive prowess, Tom.
Yeah.
I like the transfer quarterback from Ohio University.
Yeah,
he's great. He certainly has him energized. And yeah, Derek, you know, your point from the start about this being sort of a meh weekend, there are some pretty significant favorites here. A couple teams favored by over 20 points, Oregon over Michigan State, Penn State over UCLA, double-digit favorite Wisconsin, 13.5 points, 18.5 point favorite Ohio State. Indiana on the road, given 14. So you see a lot of double-digit lines here. So, and even, you know, USC and Minnesota, the Trojans are a road favorite by 8.5. So according to Vegas, doesn't look like there's going to be a lot of nip-and-tuck games here in the Big Ten this coming weekend.
Well, you know this, Tom, from your decades around college football. Every time we think it's going to be kind of a sleepy week, sometimes chaos breaks out, right?
You watch. I mean, that's prophetic, Derek. You're exactly right. Every time, at least I think I got things figured out, and it's just like it gets destroyed. So you're right. That's the beauty of sports in themselves. We never know what to expect. And college football, especially with 18 to 22-year-olds, the emotion, you know, it's you're right. Let's keep our antenna up for something crazy maybe on Saturday.
Well, spoken as the only stupid person here that picked Purdue to beat Notre Dame, and I was only 60 points off. Why not Purdue beating Wisconsin this week. Yeah. Well, I think that, I mean, that may make that definition, Derek, in terms of where a crazy thing happening. I don't see that happening. I'm not going to pick Purdue to win, but one never knows. And when's the last time Indiana been a 14-point favorite on the road in a Big Ten game?
Yeah.
Maybe in 2020 when they had that really good year, but I don't think so. It's pretty and there wasn't anybody in the stands in those games. Yeah. Now they're going to be playing at the Northwestern's little 15,000-seat soccer stadium, right? So they'll have a different environment up there. I'm sure there'll be some Indiana fans that game too because the Chicago presence. But Indiana looks great. I would be surprised if they don't get the job done up there. And I would be surprised if Purdue beats Wisconsin.
Well, guys, we'll see if it's chaotic or we'll see if it says meh. But as Purdue plays,
that's a Newbert word, meh.
I think they've got a chance.
Yeah. All right.
And we hopefully will locate, you know, Brian Newbert is in witness protection. We'll hopefully locate him before one of our next shows here. Thanks so much, Tom. Thanks so much, Alan. Looking forward to the game on Saturday.
Take care, Derek and Alan. Appreciate it, buddies.
All right.
And that's our wrap for Golden Black, a Friday edition of Golden Black Radio. Thanks so much to the sponsors of this show that make it possible. Purdue Federal Credit Union, the official credit card for Purdue fans. East End Grill and Ripple & Company, two distinctive bistros across the street from one another on the far end of Main Street in Lafayette. The Whitaker Inn, the Midwestern oasis, is perfect for a relaxing staycation or a weekend getaway. Escape from the ordinary at the Whitaker Inn. And Sand Valley Resort, celebrate all the wilderness provides this fall and winter at Sand Valley Resort. Start planning your next winter getaway by visiting sandvalleypursuits.com. And don't forget, of course, to become a subscriber if you're not already at goldenblack.com. Like I said, Knucklehead Central, Alan, Tom, Carm, Newbert, you get the whole shebang. We'll see you for the Saturday simulcast. Until then, I hope you enjoyed it. My name is Derek Schultz. This has been Golden Black Radio here on goldenblack.com.